In this podcast series, we've been exploring the subject of resilience. We generally accept that life is rarely black and white, with lots of grey. In healthcare, our medical and nursing colleagues evaluate complicated and complex patient cases and make the best diagnosis and treatment they can based on the evidence available to them. Pharmacists work in a slightly different way. We generally follow specific treatment instructions set by another medical or nursing colleague. We can apply our clinical expertise to assess if the recommended prescription is safe, such as the dose, the frequency, the interactions, any contraindications. We're essentially constantly screening for risks. There is black and white in a pharmacist's world. Treatment is safe or not. If not, it's our responsibility to ensure that this is addressed, usually by calling a prescriber, which means we can sometimes be perceived as a bit of a negative lot. We rarely call a prescriber to congratulate them on a positive prescribing. And then the dispensing. Pharmacists spend their days overseeing dispensing procedures. Are they legally accurate? Are they covered by the payment schemes? Are they appropriate? Is it the right dose, the right medicine, the right quantity? Are the instructions accurate? Because sometimes there's minimal room for error. What does this have to do with resilience? Well, we're trained to be a meticulous lot, setting very high standards for ourselves with very low tolerance for error. We know that people who have perfectionistic tendencies are likely to be less resilient. Perfectionism is something that's quite frequently encountered in pharmacy, and it's a really good quality in one way, but it does come at a personal price sometimes. Joining me today to discuss some of these topics is pharmacist Rebecca Foley. I'm Katrina Bradley, and this is The Resilient Pharmacist. Rebecca, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Katrina.
Can I ask you to introduce a little bit about yourself, Rebecca, before we get started on this topic?
Yes, of course. My name is Rebecca. I'm from Kilkenny and I'm working in community pharmacy. I did pharmacy in Trinity and Katrina, you were one of my lecturers there and loved it. And I've been working in Dublin ever since. So I'm living in Dublin as long really as I've been living in Kilkenny. Okay. I'm here now 16 years, so...
Very good. And you're working in community pharmacy, is it?
I'm working in community pharmacy, yeah. And I've finished a HDIP in psychology as well. So I'm kind of into the psychology side of pharmacy.
Oh, congratulations.
Also.
That's very interesting.
Thank you.
So with the introduction there, we introduced the concept of perfectionism. Have you experienced that in pharmacy? And can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I would consider myself a perfectionist, and sometimes it's hard to know how much of pharmacy has brought to my personality or how much of my personality I've brought to pharmacy. Like recently I was somewhere with my sister and I was downloading a parking app and I was checking the parking app against the number and she was looking at me going, "What are you doing?" And I realized I was actually doing it like I would check a prescription. And she was like, "Is that the way other people like check things? Like, no wonder I'm, you know, considered scatty." And I was like, "No, I was actually doing that like I was doing a prescription."
Yeah.
So I do think, yeah, it's I would be very meticulous.
Okay.
And you know, it's not necessarily it's not a bad thing, I think. Obviously in pharmacy I think, you know, you have to be meticulous.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's kind of like sustained at a high level all day, every day, it can become a bit draining.
Yeah.
I remember I was in an interview as well one day and there was a pharmacist and a HR person, and the HR person was like, "You know, have you ever experienced times when you had to be very meticulous or something like that?" And I was kind of looking at her going, "Yes, all day, every day. I'm a pharmacist." Mm. I don't think I got the job, but yeah. I think perfectionism is definitely part and parcel of everyday life.
But it has a downside, doesn't it? You know, so I think we're all accept that accuracy and trying to strive for high standards is, you know, part and parcel of what we do. But if we have that perfectionistic approach, it can actually show itself up in other ways, or it can make us less resilient when it comes to actually accidents happening or mistakes happening. Have you experience of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, thankfully, I haven't, to my knowledge, you know, made like a serious error. But, you know, there have been times where I've gone home and thought about something I've done during the day, like dispensed an antibiotic to a child, and then, you know, call the doctor to see if it was, if I dispensed, if it was because it felt like a kind of a high dose, and then, you know, confirm that I was right, but then thought about it all night. Mm-hmm. That, and when realistically, I had obviously checked that it was within the maximum limits and stuff, but I still was thinking about it all night. I was like, maybe that's too much clavulanic acid, you know, yeah. And it just kind of,
it plays
nearly
on your
got
mind.
It plays on your mind, yeah. Mm. And like, I know from my colleagues as well, I have a friend, and like, she gets a letter in the post of the pharmacy, she'll look at it and be like, oh my God, I'm after making a mistake, that's a solicitor's letter. Whereas realistically, it's not, like, it's a, you know, communication from the IPU or a prescription or something like that. And I see it, like, not just in myself, I see it in a lot of my friends and a lot of other pharmacists as well. It's just this high alert kind of all the time.
Gosh, that is, like, hearing you say that somebody will see a letter addressed to them and think, oh my God, what is it? I know that feeling from when you would maybe dispense something to a patient, they go out the door and you see them coming back. My first instinct was always, oh God, what did I do wrong? And it may be nothing to do with the prescription, but you're on that high alert for errors all the time, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like that, if you see somebody coming back and they've got the bag in their hand, you're like, oh no, yeah. What have I given them?
Yeah. I remember a gentleman coming back to me to the counter, and I had dispensed a prescription where he wasn't to drink alcohol for 4 or 5 days. And I had said to him, given him the advice, now you can't drink while you're on these. The poor man came back in, and my first heart sinking moment was, oh my God, what have I done? Have I, you know, something wrong? And then he said, when you said don't drink, love, did you mean water? And I thought, oh my God.
Oh, no.
This isn't, you know, you then think about all the things that you say and how you say them. And it's just, you know, you can really beat yourself up. I loved something you had said when we spoke earlier about, you know, one of the things you like about pharmacy is that we put our hands up and we detect errors quite quickly. It is a feature of our work to kind of really be on high alert, but also to deal with things when they do happen, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that's what we were always taught. It was like, if you've made a mistake, say, oh my God, I'm sorry. And that, you know, throughout my whole career, that's what I've seen. I've seen if there ever has been any errors, people have just said, oh my God, I'm sorry, let's deal with this. How can we minimize it? Mm. Rather than trying to like brush it over or trying to, you know, mask what has happened. Like, it is, it's putting up the hands and then dealing with the consequences then.
Which is a really good thing.
It is a really good thing. Yeah. And it's not something that you see in every profession.
For every walk of life, yeah. I find that myself, pharmacists, when they make a mistake, they're very quick to look at the systems, look at what happened, why it happened, rectify the issue, and then, you know, investigate, which is makes us, you know, we are quite a conscientious lot in that regard. But this aspect of, you know, the being so hard on ourselves, you said something really interesting there about you don't know for sure whether this was something you had before you went into pharmacy or pharmacy made you more so. Have you thought a bit more about that, or can we explore that a little?
Yeah, like I think I would call it particular. Like I would be very, I would check things like 3 or 4 times, you know, uh-huh. like that kind of way. Like that is kind of my personality anyway, as far as I know.
Okay.
And I think, like, circumstances, I've worked in a very, very busy pharmacy with, you know, maybe just one dispenser and one front of shop. And it was nearly a necessity because I didn't have a person to bounce off or to say, can you look at this, or, you know, that kind of way. So I think I became very just like focused on dispensing correctly. And I always kind of think to myself, like, if it, like, because it can be to the detriment of, you know, providing other care to the patients that come in, mm-hmm. you know, because you're like, so like, I don't have time to go out and talk to you because I just need to make sure that your prescription mm-hmm. is correct. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think to myself, would I prefer my family to go in somewhere where they get the right medication dispensed or they get loads of care? And I'm like, you shouldn't have to choose between mm-hmm. them. But if you did, I'd rather that they got the right medication dispensed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes down to management of where you're working and, you know, kind of higher up to make sure that there is adequate resources and adequate support that both can happen, that, you know, it's not all kind of on one person's shoulders.
Well, we'll come back to that in terms of management, because I think that's something that's come up over and over again in the podcasts. But I'm interested in this aspect of how we're trained and who selects pharmacy, because it's not just an Irish phenomenon, but the people who go into pharmacy, is there something about them that's like that already? Or in university, are we trained within our inch of our life to be in this manner, very high kind of risk focus? I know I can be quite a scattered individual, but when it comes to work, I have a particular personality, and then I'm actually completely different outside of work. So I don't know. But it took me a while to get that way. I actually applied a lot of the pharmacy personality to my outside life for a long time because I couldn't make the distinction between the two. In your experience of working with other people, have you seen it being an issue, or do you think actually it's just a factor of pharmacy and we shouldn't really be too, we should just accept that's who we are and how we are?
I think it really depends on the person, because sometimes I work with people and they're like, so easy breezy, and I'm just like, no, you only check that once, like, you need to, but I don't know, because I wouldn't, like, in my outside life, like, if you remember me from college, I wasn't the most conscientious student, I wouldn't have been like, I must get this in, like, I wasn't that typical pharmacy student even, that would have been like really conscientious about labs or anything like that. And I think it was then just from working, and like, you're giving stuff out, and not that you don't think twice about what you do, like, you check it or whatever, but then I have seen a couple of errors, and it's like, it just brings it home to you. You're like, oh my God, I'm giving stuff to people here that could kill them, the kind of way. And that's like a very dramatic way of looking at it, but
And have you had seen cases or observed any cases where that has almost happened, or where there has been harm to patients?
yes, I have. I've seen an error where there was harm to a patient, and it's devastating for the pharmacist. And then dealing with that moving forward is difficult.
Difficult for everybody, for the patient as well as for the pharmacist, yeah. So you talked about the impact of management. Have you worked in different types of environments where this has maybe been played out differently depending on the sorts of structures around the pharmacist?
Yeah, I have. So when I qualified first, I worked in a very low dispensing pharmacy. It was mainly front of shop and kind of counseling, that kind of thing. It was very low dispensing. And I worked there for a couple of years, and it kind of made me think, I was nervous about going into like real pharmacy. I was like, oh my goodness, when I have to work in a busy pharmacy now, I might struggle. Like, I'm not going to be trained as well as everybody else who has been working in the busy pharmacies. And then I worked in kind of a bit busier, 200 items a day or whatever. And then I kind of got landed into a pharmacy that was so busy, and it was could have been 500 items a day. There was no breaks, and I had a trainee dispenser, a trainee technician, and a front of shop. And it was, I thought that if I wasn't able to do it and I wasn't able to keep up to speed, that it was my fault, rather than kind of saying, hang on a second, I need more support here. I was like, and I think it was because of where I'd come from as well. I was like, oh, if I had been working in a busier shop, this would be grand. And it was fine. It was fine because I put in the extra hours. Like, I'd come in there early and I'd make sure everything was ready. I'd stay an hour late to make sure everything was ready for the next day. And there was like a nursing home, so I had to make sure that that was done. And it became like, oh, it's grand. Sure, Rebecca can do it. That kind of way. So if I was off, there might be a bit of drama, and then if I was on, it was like, oh yeah, it's okay because Rebecca's on. And I kind of thought that was like a badge of honor, rather than just being like me not establishing boundaries,
Oh my gosh,
that kind of way.
I'm intrigued by the fact that you've used that term badge of honor, because that's actually something another pharmacist has used in the podcast, saying you almost feel like you have to do this, and the fact that you can do so many items and that they need you and it doesn't go as well when you're not there is almost like that affirmation or badge of honor that you're doing a good job. Wow. And so did you then subsequently have experiences that made you realize that that was not actually a particularly reasonable work environment for you to have been in?
And I just like I didn't And again, employers have said to me in the past, they're like, "Oh, but you don't get stressed." And I'm like, "I don't panic. I'm not a panicker, and I hate panic. That would stress me more than actually, just doing everything." So I would do it, but it would kind of make me weary of pharmacy, like just kind of like, oh, that kind of way. And just I could work 6 days a week, and then I'd be just like, oh. So I said, I need to take a step back from this. And then I actually started doing my studies. So when I started doing studying psychology, I started working part-time. I've been working 3 or 4 days a week. And then now I'm working in a different pharmacy, and the environment is just completely different. Like, there's two or three pharmacists. We get an hour lunch, we get a 15-minute break, and it's just so much easier. It's like, oh, right, well, this is the way it's meant to be. And breaks are there for a reason. Like, breaks are, they're there so that people can recharge, take a break. And you're coming into work and you're worried, not worried about work, but like, you have everything else that's going on in your life, and you have to deal with that as well as work. But when if you don't get a break, if you don't get anything, you just have to think about work all day.
And it's interesting because many people have said in COVID that they've really enjoyed the fact that the pharmacy closed for an hour for lunch because they had to. It was so busy. And many said it actually made a massive difference to their working day. Sadly, we see some pharmacies reverting back and getting rid of that now. And it's something that has come up in this podcast over and over again. If you don't have a break, if you don't have that space, it's actually very, very difficult to be at the top of your game all the time. And this idea of having adequate staff, having breaks, having a good working environment actually has a huge role to play in the stress levels and burnout of pharmacists. So you've seen a different environment now. And if you were back to the pharmacy where you worked, where there was, a high volume of items, no breaks, no staff, and you were the Rebecca of today, what would you have done differently?
I would have no problem now saying to somebody, tell them, come back in a half an hour, I'm taking my break, I'm sitting down, and I'm just, that kind of way, because in the long run, it's better for everybody.
But in that pharmacy where you're doing 500 items and the customers are coming back and the patients are coming back and they're cross and you're trying to deal with it, how can you manage that? And the reason I'm asking is because I suspect there's lots of younger pharmacists who find themselves in that very situation. I did myself. So what's our advice to them?
You see, this is the thing. If you say, I'm taking a break, and you sit down for a half an hour, when you come back, the prescriptions will have piled up. So you're kind of putting more pressure on the rest of the staff in the shop as well. So I suppose it's just to say to management, to the people who can give you more support, I need another pharmacist, or I need another technician, or I just like during COVID, where I'm currently working now, we straight away, my boss was like, right, we're splitting into half days. And we did maybe 4 hours in the morning, and then a different, we split into teams and we did half days. And it just made, like, you were still getting up, so you still had that purpose. I know people who weren't working, felt a bit at sea, whereas we were still working. So we still had that purpose, and you were working, but it wasn't overwhelming. You had your 4 hours on, and then you were off for the evening, or you had your 4 hours off in the morning, and then you were on for the evening. And like, I've seen pharmacists been praised for working 6 days a week during the pandemic, and I'm like,
When you
no,
see them being
that's
praised, what do you mean?
I saw it was in like a magazine or something, and it was like, this pharmacist deserves an award because they worked 6 days a week during the pandemic. And it's not really, I think, the culture that we should be, putting on a pedestal. Like, fair play to anybody, and I don't think hard work, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing, but I don't think anybody should be expected.
Yeah, so the badge of honour goes to whoever can sustain the greatest hardship rather than necessarily looking after themselves first in order to be able to look after patients. Yeah, and that's what this podcast is about. These are the very issues that in the Irish Institute of Pharmacy, the ambassador group said they wanted to talk about and that they felt were the issues that needed to be considered around resilience. So you could give all the training courses you wanted necessarily, or you could give yoga, but actually talking about the working conditions, the way we do our job, the expectations we have of ourselves, they're actually the day-to-day things that are going to make a difference in the quality of life of a pharmacist.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you were saying you had colleagues who were in other healthcare professions who were doing, who were studying when you were studying, and they had in their professions, they sometimes had a different approach to this in their training. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so one of my friends, one of my best friends in college was studying dentistry, and she used to have a lecture that was called Life Outside Dentistry. And we thought this was the funniest thing ever. She, you know, we'd be saying, oh, will we go to the PAV or will we go to cinema or something? She'd be like, oh, I have life outside dentistry. And it was just about, you know, maintaining hobbies and maintaining, you know, a life outside dentistry, I suppose. Yeah. And at the time it was funny, but now I see the value of it. I'm like, there were, you know, it was just a different approach to their training.
And I think there's more and more about that, about self-care. I see it even with my children at, you know, primary school level. They're talking about, you know, what are the things that give you energy? What are the things that don't? How do you look after yourself? Self-care, life outside, you know, school in their case. And I think that's something that we're going to see more and more of with younger generations coming through. And I'm not sure, will they tolerate the same things we tolerated in pharmacy?
I don't think so. I think they're much more aware of, like you said, like self-care and just taking a moment for yourself and not taking every job on, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah. And it's certainly showing up on, you know, I know that the IPU did a behaviours and attitude study, and one of the big questions was posed was, how do we keep people within pharmacy? How do we keep young people from leaving the profession? Have you, if you had to have the Rebecca list of how to keep pharmacists within pharmacy, what sort of things would you be saying from the topics we've talked about?
You can't underestimate a lunch break. Like, a lunch break and a 15-minute break in the morning they're invaluable, really. Like, and if you don't have them, and you've never had them from when you start, if you like, and I see it from, like, I can see it from the other point of view, where a pharmacy owner doesn't want to be paying two pharmacists so someone can sit down if it's not particularly busy. Do you know that kind of way? But if you can take your time to sit down and have your sandwich or have your lunch, fair enough. But if you're in such a busy place that that's not possible, you need a second pharmacist, whether it be for that hour or, you know, for the full day or whatever. So that would definitely be something that I would say. And then it's so good to have the support of other pharmacists, just even if it's just a WhatsApp group, if you have, you know, if it is a pharmacy group and you have a WhatsApp group and you can just send a picture GDPR compliant of a prescription to say, like, what is this? Because sometimes they come in and they're a scribble, or they can come in and there might be something that you haven't seen before, or, like, you know, an old way of writing it or something. And again, probably when I was a younger pharmacist, I'd be like, oh, I know what this is. But now I'm just like, I have no clue what this is. Can somebody else help me?
Okay. You know, is that because you're just more willing to acknowledge that there's things that you don't know without feeling, you know, worried about that?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. A lot comes with confidence and with maturity, I think. But we really need to, these are really important discussions to be raising. And is there anything then, you said you are doing psychology as well, which I think is a lovely complement to pharmacy. Have you any insights having undergone another kind of discipline of study?
Yeah, so I've looked and I studied a bit of, like, health psychology and looked at, like, compassion fatigue.
Okay.
And that's generally studied, though, more in, like, in doctors, nurses. And actually, a lot of the psychology study in healthcare professionals seems to be more geared towards doctors and, like, hospital staff more so, I suppose. But it will be something that I will be definitely interested in pursuing.
Can I ask you about that? Because this has always interested me. A lot of the burnout studies or the fatigue studies within healthcare professions, as you say, focus on that component of compassion fatigue. So how you have to be as a healthcare professional dealing with people who are ill, who are scared, who are drawing on your energy because they're so needy. I know in Singapore, Lita, and forgive me, I can't remember her second name, she looked at burnout, but it's not so much compassion fatigue in pharmacists so much as operational fatigue, procedural, you know, it's actually the logistics of the job rather than the compassion fatigue from patients. If anything, a lot of pharmacists that I know say they get their energy from actually when they talk to the patients. Does any of that strike a chord with you, or can, you know, is that something that we need to consider perhaps in pharmacy, that we're using the wrong measure in terms of burnout and compassion fatigue?
Yeah, potentially, because during COVID, we weren't really seeing many patients, but there definitely was operational fatigue. And nearly when people started coming back in, you were like, oh, thank God I can, you know, go out and look at whatever's wrong with them, or go into the consultation room and have a chat. So, yeah, potentially it's a different fatigue.
It's a different type of fatigue. This has often occurred to me because, you know, I really try to understand the whole idea of pharmacists' resilience and the challenges by really trying to think about how they compare with their colleagues. And if I think about a medic or a nurse, say, in a ward, they're not worried about where they've sourced the medications from, whether cold chain has been maintained, whether the right conditions have been kept, whether the legalities are sorted, whether, you know, all of those things are done, and then brought that to the ward, say, for example, and had to do their clinical job. Whereas from a pharmacist's perspective, the amount of record keeping and logistics and legislation and regulations and government schemes that go into our job before we ever get to think about the patient, and then we think about it. It just seems like it's a quite unique role where it's very operationally focused in one way, and yet we have this huge clinical expertise. So I wonder if there's something in that that just goes unrecognised maybe from pharmacy.
Yeah, and it's those are jobs that can be delegated, I suppose, can't they? Like they don't necessarily need to be done by the pharmacist. There can be a person who is assigned a job like that, you know, that they don't all need to be done by the one
person. I think that's something that's come up in this podcast again. And it's kind of linked with that perfectionistic strivings, where some pharmacists find it incredibly hard to delegate because they know the amount of responsibility. You're smiling. Is that something you recognize?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I'd be like, I'll do the claim. I'll send the claim. Now, I don't currently, because one of the technicians does it and brilliantly. But previously I would have been like, oh, you know, just let me make sure that that's right.
and I suppose we've got to hold our hands up and recognise how we can come across to other professions. What do you think other professions think of pharmacy and pharmacists?
I'm not sure. Like, I know any of my friends who would have trained with me as a pharmacist in Trinity and then went on to other professions, say like medicine or whatever. I when I speak to them, they have they just have an insight that, you know, that other doctors don't have when you ring them about a prescription or something, and you're like, oh, I wish they could all train as a pharmacist first.
Okay.
So that, you know.
So these are pharmacists, people who've done pharmacy and then gone on to do medicine. Okay. And do you know many people like that?
There was a couple of people from my class who did that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Like some doctors are, you know, so grateful when you ring them.
Yeah. And so, I think that's it. It's everybody is different. We can't generalize. Yeah. I suppose one of the things we've got to be careful about in this podcast is we're talking about specific issues that need to be addressed. It doesn't mean that they affect all pharmacists or pharmacies. Yeah. And like you say, there are some fantastic practices out there where pharmacists are involved in primary care teams with their doctors, where the management and the working environments are great, very conducive to that collaboration. But I suppose what we're trying to call out is we all know that there's lots of cases where that doesn't happen, and we need to have that conversation and talk about it. And I agree, how pharmacists are perceived, I suppose, does it really matter when we're all working in the interests of the patients? But my sense is, because we're so risk focused and because we often ring with that critical assessment. What I often think about is the Gottman principle. So I'm sure you must be aware of this from philosophy or from psychology as well. But it takes roughly about 5 positive interactions to offset the impact of negative or more critical interactions. And I think if I was to think about pharmacy and, you know, any doctor colleague I would have had, was I having 5 positive interactions to offset that, you know, that call where I would say, is that really the dose you intended? Probably not. So it's, you know, I think lots of GPs and pharmacists get on incredibly well, and GPs value having the pharmacist there. But I think we sometimes need to think about the perception that we have, because we can be quite critical of ourselves and of others.
Yes, and we're pernickety as well, like we're ringing them because, obviously, like if it's a clinical issue, I think fair enough. But then we're ringing them, we're like, that's not on the HSE list. Can you give me a different insurer? You know,
I'm sure. We
and can you
their
apply
heads.
For it?
Yeah. And what? Yeah. Can you apply for it?
Can you apply for approval for it or whatever?
And that is a difficulty. We end up having to do a lot of that bureaucratic, for the want of another word. And I'm sure we can wreck their head sometimes.
Yeah.
But still, at the end of the day, do you enjoy the work as a pharmacist? You're going to continue it notwithstanding the fact that you've been involved in the psychology and undertaken that?
Yeah, I am. Like, you know, some days I love it and some days I'm like, oh, but oh God, pharmacy. But no, I definitely am going to continue in it. And when I started psychology, it was definitely with a view to combining the two of them.
Wow.
From a patient perspective or from... because a lot of the time as well, like you have somebody coming into you with, you know, mental health issues and they've got prescriptions and stuff. And I was just looking at being like, I'm handing them out a box of tablets, but, you know, I think maybe there is scope for more that we could do there. Okay. And then as I've been studying, I've kind of looked more at the side of, you know, the mental health and psychology of healthcare professionals and of pharmacists. So, yeah, I'd be interested in continuing to study because I'm enjoying, you know, studying alongside working. So
well, you've certainly chosen a fantastic topic. We've just had, at the time of recording this podcast, we had the Lifelong Learning in Pharmacy Conference, and a big theme was about resilience and developing an awareness of the specific working environments of pharmacists. So there's certainly a lot of work for you to do in the area, Rebecca. And I think you've done a tremendous job of just opening the conversation, which is what this podcast is all about. We're not pretending we have all the answers. We're not trying to just look at all the risks and negative, although it might sound like it. And maybe we're just being incredibly pharmacist-like in that regard. But they're important conversations, no doubt. And thank you so much for your contribution today and for sharing your insights with us.
No problem at all. Thank you, Katrina. Lovely to speak to you.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Pharmacist. If you like what you hear, please subscribe wherever you listened to this episode. And for more information, you can follow us on Twitter @ResilientPharm.